clubs and churches and organizations, and these are the people who control the people out here. And you see, my method of getting to the black people is a little different than the press, which I'm going to put out some sound trucks. You understand me?
Yep.
This attracts blacks. They'll listen and they'll follow it.
Yep, yep.
You know, some of those people pick up a thing and can't even read it. If they read it, they'll understand what they're reading.
I understand,
you've
yeah.
got problems that, you know, everybody look up and say, well, they should be reading, but they don't know that some people can't.
Sure, sure, I understand.
But they go to polls and you tell them what, we need him as much as the other people need him. Because he's the only one that's ever done anything in the Senate for us. You see, just like I told him, I go back with this man 30 years, and I know what he's done in the different programs and proposals that he's gotten for the hospital. He's forgotten them, but I haven't. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel that I'm definitely, and I felt kind of left out when I hadn't been told a long time ago about something that would, you know, to do something, what I could do. He could find out what I could do, what I could get a group of people to do. Because I had definitely planned to set up a headquarters here for it.
Yeah.
All I want was a sign out in front. And I could work the rest.
Well, obviously, I appreciate all your efforts.
Well, we're going to work like hell. I'll tell you that between now and Tuesday, we're going to work like hell.
Great, great.
So if there's anything that you want between now and then, well, you just call. Between Monday, I'm going to have the wagons out.
Okay, super. Can you hold on 1 second?
Trust me.
I have one other favor to ask.
What's that?
This morning we were hoping to get, you know, the way the Harlem Hospital meeting turned out, you know, he really conducted sort of a back and forth, give and take kind of meeting. And what we were looking for, which I don't think that kind of setting allowed for, is, you know, something that he or someone there might have said that we could take like 35 seconds of, and what we do is reproduce it and then give it to all the radio stations for playing. But because of the way... Great, yeah, that's what
see
I...
See what I'm talking about.
Would you mind doing that?
I know these. You want me to start?
I'll tell you when, just 1 second.
Okay.
We just need to get set up. Hold 1 second. Okay, go.
Senator Javits has been very kind to the Harlem community as far as health is concerned. Senator Javits started back in 1960s when he was able to get the first proposal through for detection of cancer, cervical cancer. Cervical cancer is the highest in the black community. Senator Javits made a great effort, and through that we get a 5-year proposal, which I have a copy of to show and to prove. Senator Javits has helped when we needed help. Health care has been able to get money. In 1974, I think the United States gave out $11 million to the states or something for cervical cancer. Nothing was given to Harlem Hospital, where in a black neighborhood, cervical cancer is higher than anywhere else. Senator Javits, although the program had been started, was able to get us funded for the next 2 years to carry on with detection of cervical cancer amongst the black people or the people of the Harlem community. He has been a stalwart in health, in helping the black. I have never been able, remember a time that I haven't gone, I've been able to go to Senator Javits and asking for a favor and help that concerns this community, the community which I practiced 40 years of medicine in, this black community. Never has he failed me.
Very valued member of our staff for a while. And by the way, we've had other specialists and experts both at home and abroad. And have found it rather universally a wonderful aid. Nobody knows better than I in how much trouble this hospital is or can be, and I wish I had all the money you need or could get it. But we do and can help in many ways, and especially your own excellence, and if anybody ever got an A for effort, it's your Harlem Hospital. And I want to pay my tribute to the doctors and nurses and all the health personnel for what they have to go through in a hospital which is so used and so underfinanced and under-equipped, considering the tremendous calls on it. there are a number of initiatives that I'd like to pursue, and I'd like your critical comment on them about these primary care centers that you've just heard. And I must say that I'm very interested primarily, and I'd welcome any comment based upon your experience here. I'm very interested in what we call HMOs, that is health maintenance organizations, which now is transmuted here, I gather, in something called CityCade, a prepaid health care system. And my reason for that is that I'm a great believer in preventive care, and I believe that while cost control is vital, costs are astronomical. And I'm all for them and will lend myself to any reasonable program on that score. I think the ultimate question is about health care versus sickness care. And, of course, as to overall cost, mutualization as against a governmental payment without mutualization, to wit the insurance premium feature. So again, if there are any who demur or don't agree with me on that, the last thing that I'd like to raise and kind of leave on the table here, aside from national health insurance, which I just mentioned. By the way, my concept of national health insurance would take out millions upon millions of workers who have employer-employee plans. And so long as they met a federal minimum, I would leave them be and not try to include them in a system. Now, that might prove to be, make the system a little more expensive because you would have eliminated many of the good risks. But I think there would still be enough insurability left in terms of a diversity of risks that it would be a good move to not to burden administration of a national plan in that way. Lastly, I realize better than anybody that Medicaid and its content, Medicare and its content, that welfare, that the job training, all of this is an element in your work. And I wonder, and throw this out as a question because it's been of interest to me for a long time, to what extent there is an analogy in a hospital like this with the what we've done on the college campuses about giving the college authorities what we call a handful of playing cards. By that I mean various types of grants and loans and guarantees which enable the college authorities to adjust a plan, a financial plan for the student to the law and to the needs of that student, and question whether hospitals should not have a tie-in to jobs, job training, and other aspects, even welfare, which do not directly relate to health and yet in fact do relate to health. Those are my questions, and please ask me any of yours.
Dr. Cave.
Hi, Senator.
Doctor, nice to see you. Thank you. Oh, great pleasure.
I think certainly we've had some involvement with training programs of people who have been receiving some sort of assistance. We've had the PCP program, and people give us maybe two sessions a week, is supposed to be a learning experience for them. But I think it has to be done on a much broader basis. We have too many people in this community who are currently unemployed or underemployed and who could benefit from a learning situation, at which time they also make a contribution to the health of the people of this community. So I think that plan is an extremely a good one. I think we have some broader problems, however, and that is being able to develop an adequate plan for adequate financing of healthcare in institutions such as this, some sort of capitation type of assistance, if you will, would be a benefit to this institution because we have large numbers of non-pay patients. And if we could develop some sort of capitation system for being able to reimburse this institution, would permit us to not only employ people with greater skills, but also would enable us to employ the kinds of instructors who can instruct people who are currently unemployed and could benefit from some upgrading in their education.
I'd like to make a response and make a suggestion. I agree with you about capitation, and that, of course, is essential. If we're to have preventive care, without capitation, you can't have preventive care. So I thoroughly agree in that. And capitation should come from sources which are responsible, it probably would have to be governmental sources, for the maintenance of that individual for the time being, whether it's welfare or old age assistance or disability assistance or whatever might be the participating program. But I would like to ask you rather a question which I hope you won't feel is an offensive one. But many people, you know, take the training and don't do anything with it. And life becomes a process of piecing together one spell of welfare or training or whatever with another, and that's a total life. In European universities, they have students like that. Some 60 years old, they're still students. So I just wonder, what is the medical outlook on that problem? In other words, having given people a chance and an opportunity to come up to the starting line, equal with others. What do you do? Do you do what we did in World War II, bypass the tough ones and come back to them later on? Or do you remain a prisoner of those circumstances so that you constantly feel you have an ongoing responsibility for a particular individual, even though that individual has not responded or tried? I just wondered what, this is where you face it in a place like this.
I think part of the problem in a number of these programs, such as CEDA and other programs in which patients have received training, has been that they have not been absorbed once they have received their training. They are usually generally ready and prepared to accept their responsibilities and accept employment, but it's all often that in the public and even the private sector, they are not absorbed, and the training which they received is not properly acknowledged and then utilized. I don't think that the majority of people who have received adequate training do not feel that they do not want to get out into the employment market and continue to be gainfully employed. I think most of them do. There are some that fall into the category which you speak of, and I'm not exactly sure what you do about those.
Okay, but do you think the problem is minimal, really?
That problem.
Yeah, that problem.
I think our problem is continuing to find employment for these people once they have exhausted the training grants that they have.
Right. Okay, it's very instructive to me. Very instructive.
Dr. Paul? Comments? Yes, Senator, your comments concerning the HMO and the people who they would supposedly take care of. We still are faced with the peaks and valleys. We have the group who are covered by state Medicaid or federal insurance, and then we have those who are covered by job insurance or gainfully employed. But we have that valley in the marginal group who do not qualify for Medicaid or its equivalent and are not on jobs where they have medical insurance for their jobs. Now here we have a great number of people who fall into that valley, into that gap between the two areas. Any type of HMO organization, of course, must take in that group of people. And since they do not have a third-party payer coverage, they are left dangling, and something must be done about that group. And we have a large number of those.
Now, may I ask a question?
Sure.
Those people certainly, if they were below our given line, would get welfare, correct?
Yes.
If they were above a given line, they wouldn't need Medicaid.
That's correct.
That's correct. Now, what do you do about making them pay what they can afford to pay?
Well, there
in other words, is it black or black and white, to wit? If they're in the gap, they pay nothing?
Well, that's yes and no. There is a sliding scale of fees that you apply based theoretically upon their ability to pay, which for the most part means that they pay the minimum. But the other factor is those who can't don't get care,
well,
don't come to get care.
When you say those who can't, you've defined a class which can pay something. Otherwise, it would be in the welfare class.
Well, Senator, when you have a sliding scale fee that goes up to $60 to a visit for the clinic, and you're only making $120 a week.
Well, you can pay 50 cents.
But you don't come, well, they don't have any fees like that.
No, I understand. That's what I'm talking about. With all respect, you see, I'm talking about that. I'm talking about how to sell my colleagues on this proposition. I've got a bill in for it.
Yes.
To deal with the city hospital gap, which you've described, and which also deals with undocumented aliens who are afraid to surface. But when they get a pain in the neck, they got to surface. So this is a problem, and we first have to answer the criticism that those who should pay something don't pay anything. And then we're talking about supplementation. The working poor are very popular in the Congress. I'm telling you something very deep. Provided they are truly the working poor. And that means that they say that they pay something because they're working. And I think that that's a very important point for you gentlemen and ladies to think about. We want to win this, and I think we can win it in the Congress. I really do. But we're going to have to show our good faith by showing that it's also a therapy to be made to pay something.
Thank you, Mr. Senator. Administrator probably can speak to this better because he's familiar with the collection system, but I wanted to point out that a family of four with $15,000 these days find it very, very difficult to pay anything for medical care. They do not set aside any monies for medical care. And once they have completed paying for housing, for rent, for schooling, for their children, and for food, they do not have any money set aside for medical care, so they suddenly get sick and they come to us and they're billed according to their annual income, but to actually collect becomes sometimes difficult, and I think our administrator probably can address himself to you much better than I can on that bit. I think that now something positive has been done in terms of the demonstration grant for Metropolitan Hospital, in which they developed a Citicaid system whereby a family of four making $15,300 or so can be granted free medical care in this demonstration project. I think this kind of capitation becomes much more essential throughout our Harlem community.
Senator, in the socioeconomically deprived areas, health care is not considered to be one of the primary concerns, as Dr. Cave and others have illustrated here. When an individual has four, five, six people in a family, he's making $8,000, $9,000, he's not going to be concerned about setting aside money for health care. He's going to be concerned about the necessities, food, clothing, and shelter. By law, being a governmental institution, if a person presents himself to the emergency room, we cannot deny care based on the ability to pay. So what they will do is abuse the emergency room for that care. We will bill them. We will ask them for monies. But if they have none, we still must give them that care. I think, as Dr. Cave stated, if there was some type of city care for the Harlem community, then we would not have this enormous numbers of, quote, self-pay, because there's no way these people can pay. You can bill them, you can send to collection agencies, you still will not get any.
Well, the requirement that you serve them in the emergency room is a requirement of law, and it can be unrequired by law. I tell you, gentlemen, I understand your problem, and I'm very sympathetic, and I've gotten lots of aid for you within this problem. But it's a problem you're going to have to solve if you really want to do business and you really want to get this aid. For example, even the fellow that's earning $9,000 may very well be paying his trade union 50 cents a week. Maybe. Probably. He certainly is using that up in Coca-Cola. Now, a deposit plan could be developed by which, before a person could come in here, unless it were truly an emergency and so diagnosed by the person at the desk, he'd have to bring a card showing that he's currently paid up in whatever little sum he's paying. Make him the prepayer. I realize your problems. Mind you, I'm not begging the question. I'm only pointing out, as an experienced legislator, what's going to sell legislators on the idea of doing what you want. Because there's nothing that is more impressive to them than some degree of self-help. And I know how difficult it is in the Harlem community. You're going to have pickets outside your door in 30 seconds telling you what outrageous skinflints you are. But I'm only telling you that this problem will not be unlikely to be solved by law unless there is some way in which there is some contribution. That's I'm just telling you the bottom line.
May I comment on that?
Sure.
Senator. See, the more I listen to this, the more I'm reminded of the title of a book called Blaming the Victim.
Yeah.
And I don't think people who want to regret paying 50 cents or a dollar, if that kind of scale is available. The unemployment problem is not primarily due to the unwillingness of people to work, but due to the lack of jobs and lack of availability and lack of access to jobs. So if you can do something, provide the jobs, and then you'll find that the poor generally all belong to the working poor and not those who don't want to work. But the way the welfare system has been devised, sometimes it's more difficult for them to pay their bills if they start working. I remember when I was teaching in Boston University Medical School, one of my secretaries, she had a bad tooth, and when she went to the dentist, he pulled out the filling she had and said she needs a root canal job, which costs X number of dollars, and she was not entitled to any kind of welfare payment as long as she had the job. So she had to give up the job to qualify for some of the existing welfare payments. So I think the real cause is the mechanism that exists now, which prevents people from paying that. If she could pay a dollar and get her tooth fixed, surely she'd have continued to work and do that. It keeps many people away from their jobs. And if you're talking about prevention, unless they are willing to invest in environmental improvements, in housing, in nutrition, in providing jobs and things like that on a larger scale. Just focusing on medical care and calling that prevention, I think, is again a fruitless search. And please remember, Senator, that of all the industrialized countries, the United States is the only country without a national health plan. And you can't blame that on the poor.
Well, I don't blame it on the poor, and I'm all for the national health plan. I've been working for it for years, and I certainly will continue to do so. I'm only making a suggestion about what do you do in the meantime, and you know, what is the congressional receptivity to what we need to do in the meantime. And if that suggestion is impractical, it's impractical. But it's, I know what it'll take. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I'll continue, as I always have, to muster every human resource possible and every financial resource possible for this purpose. It certainly is deserved. But I think for this institution, we're talking about Harlem Hospital, if you could come up with some scheme of this kind, it would really be a 10 strike. Really a 10 strike.
How did your bill address the problem of the what we now call undocumented failure?
By grants, which are based upon the fact that that it's a national problem, not your problem, and therefore that if an undocumented alien comes in here for treatment and you treat him for humanitarian reasons, you're entitled to bill for it. And if we want to throw the alien out, we throw him out. If we want to look into what he's doing and what his circumstances are, we do it. But we don't tax you, which is the present. You're really hiding the alien. That's what it comes down to now.
Well, would the alien have to become visible upon getting care from us?
Are there no other way? How are you going to get reimbursed otherwise? I mean, you know, why should the government condone your hiding the undocumented alien?
Yeah.
You know, the government's in a trap, too.
There's two things I think needs to be clear, I think, within the Congress. Number one, we are here to deliver health care and not to receive a bounty for turning in aliens. The second thing is, based on what the Congress has asked, you are taking away the prerogatives of a doctor to make a decision to treat a patient. So you're telling us now through some system here we can say who will be treated. They will have to have a prepaid type of system, or they would have to put down X number of dollars. You're compromising the doctor. And I think this is a problem.
It is a problem, and a great problem, but will you tell me what's going to happen around here if Harlem Hospital has to close up?
Well, hopefully we will not close, but we will not deny care to anyone that presents themselves here. Based solely on their ability to pay. We will try to assist them if we feel they are medically indigent and they require, they meet the requirements of Medicaid or whatever. But we will continue to treat patients.
Well, my bill gives you grants for the purpose.
Right, and we
and that's the only
that.
Way we have at the moment to meet a very knotty question. But my mind naturally tries to run to ways in which we can do better and assure the passage of such a bill. And right now, I can only tell you that it's not likely to pass, though, as you know, I've introduced it and I've worked for it and will continue to. And we do get some things